Hey there, everybody. You are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm your host, Ken Schneck. This is episode number 327. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us a line, send an email on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. You can follow us on Twitter. The handle is thisshowisogay. And of course, stroll on over to that Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. We have such a great show for you this week. We must get started with our guest. Sarah Prager is a speaker, a writer, an entrepreneur, a consultant, an activist, and so much more. Her writing has been published in The Advocate, the Social Media Monthly magazine, The Huffington Post, The Gay Life newspaper, and so many more than that. In 2014, she worked with Apple and Google to make their tech policies more inclusive of bisexual terms. She was also invited to the White House to contribute on LGBTQ tech issues that year. She is the creator of Quist, a mobile app, a free mobile app, important to say that, that brings LGBTQ and HIV history to life with a following of tens of thousands. It's in hundreds of countries. I'm so excited to talk about it. But first, Sarah Prager, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, thank you so much. Happy to be here.
We have so much to chat about. Are you ready?
Yes, I am.
This is what I discovered. Sarah Prager, activist at 14 years old. Is that true?
Sure. I came out as lesbian when I was 14, and I do believe that coming out can be an act of activism or
absolutely
politics or anything that you really want to call it, because it does change the world. It's what changed our movement, is people coming out. And yes, right away, all through high school, I was president of the Gay Straight Alliance and organized other student groups for other causes. And yeah, so definitely all through my teens, I was an activist.
Nice. Now, I'm even reading that at one point you had something to do with vegan weddings, which is very exciting to me, Sarah.
Yeah, that's my other former niche. Before LGBT history, it was vegan weddings, believe it or not. I had a vegan wedding, and
wow.
I was working for a website now called Vegan Weddings, HQ. And it was one of my earlier entrepreneurial endeavors that I sold a year ago to be able to spend more time on Quist. I had a lot of different little businesses that worked to varying degrees or not, and Quist was the one that took off the most, and I'm full-time on it now.
Oh, gosh. And we have a ton to talk about with Quist, but I have to ask, what did you serve at your vegan wedding?
Well, we served stuffed tomatoes and, oh gosh, I'm not even going to remember. Some kind of baked spinach thing, vegan cupcakes, little stuffed mushroom caps for appetizers along with other stuff, and I don't know.
This is good stuff. This is good stuff. We have, last question on this, and then I swear we're moving on to other things. We've had Nathan Runkle on the show, the executive director of Mercy for Animals, and I will pose to you, we haven't had him on in so long, I will pose to you the question that I have posed to him many times. Sarah Prager, do you think that there is a connection between being gay and being a vegan?
Well, I think that both ways of being require you to question the status quo.
There you go.
And I guess there would be a connection there, though I would definitely say there's a very big difference in choice, identity, rights, et cetera.
Very exciting.
But yeah, I do think, I had to think, everybody's doing this, but whether it's being straight or eating meat, I guess, but I feel differently.
Yeah. All right. I expect recipes after this episode airs, Sarah. I am excited. Now, in your bio, I said speaker, writer, entrepreneur, consultant, activist. Is there a label to which you particularly gravitate?
Out of those?
Yeah. Or no, add more. I'm all fine with that.
Well, I mean, the ones I would add would be personal, like wife.
Yeah.
Those are the other most important things in my life. Cat mom, of course.
Of course.
I think I still haven't found the right word to sum it all up, but somewhere at the intersection of all of that, I guess it's just big nerd for LGBT history is, and, you know, spreading the word of LGBT history comes out in speaking and blogging and the app and all kinds of different ways, but it's all under that.
Yeah. You exist, as I was reading all about you, you exist at this kind of fun intersection between nonprofit work, activism, and technology. And we don't often talk about technology on this show, which is kind of ironic given that, you know, we're a radio show and podcast.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Talk to me about using tech to advance nonprofit causes.
I would love to. So, and especially when it comes to LGBT work. So, of course, technology today connects all of us in ways that never before existed. And we can reach audiences around the world so much more easily and cheaply than before using tools like social media. Nonprofits have a huge opportunity there to leverage their cause to find new volunteers and new donors and new petition signers, etc. And for me, when it comes to, say, the intersection of LGBT and tech and activism specifically, I used a change.org petition to get in touch with Apple and Google, because who just has a connection that they can call up, or if you just email press@google.com gets a reply. So I went to the press and I had the masses sign petitions, and that's what got them to take notice, and I was able to get in touch with them that way. So sometimes people talk about a term slacktivism, where all you do is watch a video, like a post, or write your name on a big petition on somewhere like change.org. But I believe when you use those tools correctly, it is absolutely effective, and I mean, it was for me with Apple and Google, and now with the app Quest, we're able to reach people that, you know, I've never met. I also go around speaking about LGBT history, and I get similar comments on speaking evals that I do in the app user survey of, I love learning about LGBT history and things like that in either medium, so I can just reach thousands more than the hundreds I get to a year in person.
Sarah, I don't want to gloss too quickly over the success with Apple and Google. That had to make you feel great.
It did. It was kind of the beginning of this whirlwind of the last year and a half of my life. I got a notice, kind of a little like error message, kind of, when I was submitting the Apple version of Quest to the App Store. And it told me that bisexual, in my description where I said this was about gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, etc. history, for some reason only the word bisexual was flagged as a spam word or inappropriate word.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I started the petition about, and to make them remove this block on the word bisexual. And through that, Binet USA reached out to me, and my eyes were open to a whole world of bisexual visibility or erasure activism, and realized just how much in text the word bisexual is so much more blocked. And it's not because it has sex or sexual in it, because pansexual, polysexual, transsexual, none of those are blocked in the same way. And after getting Apple to change their policy, that only took 24 hours, a many months long experience with Google took place that still hasn't quite been resolved. And I learned that it had been going on for at least a couple of years before I got involved. And lots of other activists have worked on that issue too. And our petition of about 15,000 signers is just one addition to that movement to unblock the word bisexual in Google search.
What would it take? How do we advance that one forward?
Well, I think, honestly, using the press, tweeting negatively about a company really does get their attention much more than anything else publicly on social media or press articles about it. They've been happy to work with us, but we just haven't quite gotten to the place where we wanted to, because before I got involved, they had made a statement saying, this is fixed. And when we went and checked it, it wasn't fixed at all. So Now it appears to be more fixed than before, but they were unwilling to make a public statement saying that it had, and that, or an apology, or just, you know, a positive event around bisexuality at their offices or something like that, anything to kind of wrap it up. So we didn't feel like it was completely finished. But anyone interested in joining kind of the strategic work around that can contact me. My email is info@quistapp.com, and I can forward you on to Binet USA and everyone working on that specific issue if you want to get involved.
All right. We got to make some movement there. Now, Sarah, I have walked by the White House. I've never been in, and I've never contributed to an LGBTQ tech issues gathering.
Well, the LGBT Tech Innovation Summit was incredible, and they just had a second one this year that I was not at, but I know that they grew it even more. This White House, you know, we know that they have their annual Pride reception in June for national leaders and activists in the LGBT community, and other events like this happen too, where the LGBT White House liaison organized one around tech, along with a few other organizations that I really respect, including Lesbians Who Tech and the LGBT Technology Partnership in D.C. And that second one does a lot of work on not just the word bisexual, but LGBT people getting access to the internet and to tech. And they even have a program about getting free smartphones into the hands of homeless LGBT youth.
Oh, that's great. That's great stuff. All right. Again, listeners, we are here with Sarah Prager, the founder and director of Quist, which I briefly mentioned on last week's show. I'm so excited to talk with this, Sarah. I would imagine you love talking about this.
I do. There's nothing else besides my wife and cats that I love to talk about more.
And sometimes it's a competition. I'm just saying, my cat sometimes, you know, loses out to talking about this radio show. So Quist could win out.
There's got to be a way to combine them, like a little Harvey Milk t-shirt on the cat or something like that.
I love that Sarah Prager just came up with her next venture right here on our radio waves. Yeah, right. It's very exciting. Okay.
Halloween costume.
Yes. Yeah. Take us back. Where did the idea come from? I am obsessed with Quist. Where did the idea come from?
Oh, thanks so much. Well, I guess it started when I was coming out when I was 14, and I started teaching myself queer history because I didn't really know many, if any, other out people around that time, which is so common. No matter if you're in an accepting environment or a dangerous environment, that sense of community from knowing other LGBT people can't be replaced and is such a strong factor in helping, you know, with mental health outcomes, suicidality outcomes. It makes a really big difference to know that there are others like you. And that's what learning LGBT history was for me, just from the books in the library. And I'm young enough that when I was 14, I had internet access. So learning about these LGBT people from the past gave me that sense of community because I could see a piece of myself in them. And I knew that they had done their activism so that I could be safer and more open today. And it inspired me. And I guess 4 or 5 years ago, I studied writing for the web at Emerson post-grad, where we learned about how people read differently on screens than hard copy, and how things should be scannable and short and digestible and quick headlines short blurbs, browsable. And so I wanted to translate LGBT history books and even text-heavy LGBT history websites into that format, kind of like a Facebook feed. And that's when I came up with the idea of Quist. The reason for launching it was more because when I was launching all of these little side projects to see if I could, you know, have some business take off, because my wife started going to med school full time and I became the breadwinner and I felt a need to make some extra money outside of my 9-to-5. So Vegan Weddings and Quist and others were these side projects to see if, I don't know, selling ads in Quist would help support my family. We since have gone to a nonprofit route, and the app has always been free and will always be free, but it just kind of started out of this entrepreneurial drive and combining this idea that I had already had. So I had to raise the money to pay some coders, because while I'm in the tech field, I am not a developer of apps. So I was raising the $6,000 needed to launch it 2 years ago, and it looked like we weren't going to make our goal by far. And a complete stranger from the other side of the country, who as far as I know doesn't identify as LGBT, donated $5,000 and made it happen. And Quist was born.
Nice. Now, let's go to the logistical side. When they download Quist, what will they find, all of our listeners who are going to go do it right after we're done?
When you open up the app, you're going to see what happened today in LGBT history. So take a date, let's say October 31st.
Okay.
Just looking forward. If you opened it, you could see what happened on October 31st, 1701, October 31st, 1990, and you would be able to flip through these screens where they are just like the headings, the like headlines and the beginnings of the stories of what happened on that day and in what place. And anyone that interests you, you just tap on it and you get a more complete, the complete blurb about what happened on that day. You get related links, related videos, related products like books that you could buy to learn more about it or just look up at your library. And the source, and there's a little button where you can tweet it too. So when you're not looking at just the events of the day, the historical events that happened on that day in history, you can search by any keyword through the 1,000 historical events that we have in the app's database. And you can also now, as of a few months ago, browse by location, which will give you a Google map of the whole world with about 700 for now locations pinned on it that are LGBT historic sites or monuments or memorials related to LGBT history or LGBT historic figures, LGBT history related museums, archives, AIDS memorials. It's all on this map, and you just zoom around and see, just find all of the crazy stuff that is right in your backyard.
Now, Sarah, I enjoy typing in my birthday and finding out what happened on that day.
That's what I always recommend. Do you remember what you found for your birthday?
I want people to look it up because some really cool things happened on February 20th. I can't give them all the answers, but you're telling me that doesn't make me self-centered, right? That that's the date that I type in?
No.
Okay.
No, I mean, if you think of a date, what are people going to think of?
Okay, maybe good.
After their birthday, their anniversary, yeah.
Just checking, because some really cool things happened, and I encourage everyone to look it up. Now, yeah. I would imagine, Sarah Prager, I would imagine you're getting some pretty darn cool feedback.
I am. That's my favorite part of my job. We recently did another user survey that went just a little deeper than finding out what's your age, where do you live, country level. Did you learn any LGBT history or not? And we asked more questions like, do you feel more empowered or less isolated or things like that after using the app? And we found out that people do. And one person from the Midwest wrote to me that in that survey that they are a little more open with their identity in public than they were before, feeling empowered from knowing that they're not the first to feel this way and they're not alone through using the app, and that it's made them look up more LGBT stuff and develop their identity. And that was exactly the goal. Yeah, I do. I mean, people who write in to say thanks, it just makes my day. And the in-person speaking events really do that too, where I get to see it on their faces, because most of the time when I go and speak, it's to youth, and they're just like, there were non-binary people in the past. Everyone's been telling me it's this weird new fad and that I'm just trying to follow a trend. And I told them that's not what I'm doing. It's just how I feel.
Yeah.
But now that I know that I have a way to answer to them and a context to place myself in. And yeah, it's so fulfilling.
Oh, it's so great. Now, you and I both had pieces on the Huffington Post published the same day, which was super fun. Mm-hmm. And I was really proud of mine. I'm like, okay, people are reading this. And then Sarah Prager puts out a piece called Every LGBTQ Plus Person Should Read This. Sarah, do you have a sense of how viral your piece went?
We were at 79,000 likes and about 20,000 shares last I looked.
Sarah, do you have a sense of how viral that is? That's huge.
Yeah, no. Actually, I got to a new level of internet fame because I started getting anti-LGBT tweets and messages for the first time for any of my LGBT work. And I was like, now I've really made it.
I had the same experience, but on a smaller scale that same day. That's so funny.
Really?
Now tell everyone what they will find, because it's a very affirming piece right before National Coming Out Day. And I'm going to link to it so everybody can check it out. But what are some things that every LGBTQ plus person should know?
Well, it's really what I was just saying, is that you're not alone and you're not a new fad, that queerness, I use the term quistery for queer history as an umbrella term of all non-straight, non-cisgender things in all of history, because the words gay and lesbian and bisexual and transgender are a matter of decades old, and the modern Western construction of gender and sexuality is not the way it's always been. The gender binary doesn't even exist in all cultures today. There are places where there are three genders or five genders. And over all of time, there have been so many different cultures that either see it that way, or where homosexuality was the norm instead of heterosexuality, where bisexuality and all the other sexualities were accepted. And especially when you look pre-Christianity, pre-colonialism around the world. So the piece is telling people that we're actually not the new fad. Homophobia is younger than homosexuality.
Yeah.
And your LGBT heritage is not something that started in the 1960s. It's any culture that you're from, any ethnicity or religion, there's an LGBT history to your community, and you are a part of it.
Yeah, we've said it so many times on the show over the past 7 years, this idea when you are a part of your biological family, you will quite naturally get some family history there. But when you come out as LGBTQ, you're not just given a pamphlet. And I've always said there should be this pamphlet that people get as soon as they come out that says, hey, by the way, here's your history. And you provided the pamphlet. It's just on our phones.
Well, I really was trying to do that, because the thing is, we have to teach it to each other. Because we're not learning it in schools, or usually from our families of origin. You know, I knew a little bit more about Jewish history or women's history because those things were particular to me or my family, so that you learn a little more about that. But, you know, I have two straight parents and cisgender parents, and so I didn't learn more LGBT history than any other kind of identity that they're not. And that's why we have to share it with each other. And that's been one of my favorite parts of Quist, is that one of the main comments that we get is people use the app to share what they've learned with other people. We know that people are using it in youth groups, where they'll start off, the organizer will read off the history of the day from their phone using Quist or something, and they can all share that together. Or just the tweets that we see of people sharing our blog posts, our app history, and people just love like spreading the interesting knowledge that they found. Yeah, that's what teaching each other is all about. And I have a whole team of volunteer researchers who have added things into the app, and anybody can add missing historical content into the app, either an event or a location with a form on our website.
Now, I have to imagine that you being a part of Quist has not helped your LGBT social life, because I would never, let me just tell you, Sarah Prager, I would never invite you to my gay dinner party, because if I say something like, well, this is what happened, I know Sarah Prager is going to raise her hand and say, actually, that's totally not what happened. And if you just look at my app, you would know for sure.
I try so hard not to know-it-all. And you know what I do? For my social life, I just go to professional networking events where I can just talk about Quist anyway, and no one will get sick of it because it's appropriate to talk about your work there. But, you know, I mean, the thing is, I have no history degree. I just read this stuff from books and websites and some archives, but mostly stuff that anyone can access. And anyone reading Quist can then go and learn more about, more than I know, about the little blurb that I wrote out of, you know, a little bit in a book where I found it. It's a collection of everything that's already out there, and there's so much more out there that we're still adding in. And, you know, when nobody has a monopoly on the knowledge of this stuff, I get excited about the cool stuff that I learn, and I want to share it like our users want to share it, but I would never consider myself even an expert on LGBT history, because I'm just another person who likes to read about it and learn it. I have a BA in Spanish, and, you know, it's a lot more accessible than people think.
You know, I hear what you're saying, Sarah, and still I'm not inviting you to my dinner party because I don't want you showing me up. It probably was the vegan thing, but I'm not sure. What's coming up next for Quist? What are you looking to do next? How do we evolve this further? Because one of the only things that I understand about technology, which is not a ton, is that we have to keep these things current. How do we evolve this to the next level?
So Quist is incorporating as a nonprofit, where the app will be our first of many educational tech products. We have a LGBT history video game on the horizon in a couple years. I'm continuing to go do workshops, and expanding the app's database is something that we're doing, but we're also reaching out outside of the app to give our database away to other history projects or to other LGBT products, so that they incorporate LGBT history into what they're doing, and we can spread it further beyond even just ours. But future products, I can't say what they all are, but we want to come out with more things that are like the app, but are maybe on different platforms, and just try to reach every learning style and every accessibility to technology level that we can. And nothing is public yet, but I may or may not have a book deal for a young adult, like an LGBT history for teens book coming out in June 2017.
Look at that. Oh, this is so exciting. So much exciting stuff. All right, listeners, this is what you need to do. You need to go to your app store. It's located right there on your phone, and you can download Quist, and you're going to get a ton of great information. And apparently, it is not egotistical of you to constantly look at what happened on your birthday or on my birthday. You also need to stroll on over to sarahprager.com, sarahprager.com, and you can learn all about Sarah and all the cool things that she's doing. I assume that in the next few weeks, for sale on that website will be the new t-shirts that combine cats with Harvey Milk of some way. I'm very excited about that. Sarah, I have to tell you, this is so exciting to me. I think that for all the reasons that you said, because LGBTQ history is just so often glossed over, and it's not something that we get from our parents when we come out, that you have filled that void to provide us with a sense of history and a sense of belonging and a sense of community, this is so great. So everybody needs to go download Quist. Are we agreed on that one?
I will agree on that, yes. And thank you so much. This was so fun.
Sarah Prager, keep doing what you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you.
I went all the way to Paris to forget your face. Captured in stained glass, young lives long since passed, statues of lovers every place. I went all across the continent to relieve this restless love. I walked through the ruins, icons of glory smashed by the bombs from above. So we must love while these moments are still called today. Take part in the
All right, folks, and we are back. Well, we do indeed have some time left on this week's episode, so let's get to some of the LGBT news that's out there. Republican presidential hopeful Rand Paul has a suggestion for how LGBT people can avoid discrimination, because apparently it is up to LGBT people to avoid discrimination. His sage advice, stay in the closet. At a campaign event this week at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa, a member of the audience asked Rand Paul if employers should be able to fire a person for being gay. Rand Paul, a U.S. senator from Kentucky, replied, quote, "The things you do in your house, if you leave them in your house, they wouldn't have to be part of the workplace." He then went on to say, "If you are gay, there are plenty of places that will hire you." And then he went on to object to LGBT-inclusive anti-discrimination laws because they provide yet more people with grounds to bring lawsuits. Joe D. Winterhoff, a senior vice president for policy and political affairs at the Human Rights Campaign, said this in response, quote, "Rand Paul appears to be living in a different era. People should not be required to live in the closet or hide who they are in order to be treated equally and fairly under the law. Rand Paul is going to find very little support for his views among the 9 out of 10 Americans who have an LGBT person in their lives. But Rand Paul's comments do beg the question of whether his fellow candidates will call him out for embracing a platform of discrimination," end quote. In response to that, the Republican field has said nothing. They have said nothing. Rand Paul's position is common among the Republican field. Most of the candidates oppose enacting laws protecting LGBT people from discrimination, with notable exceptions being New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and former New York Governor George Pataki. At least in their own home states, they objected to this. Businessman Donald Trump has said being gay shouldn't be a reason to fire an employee, but he hasn't discussed specific legislation. And just to remind you all, 31 states, that would be 31 states, including Ohio, the state in which this show Is So Gay is recorded, 31 states lack fully inclusive non-discrimination laws, and several attempts at passing a federal law have failed. The current iteration of the federal proposal is the Equality Act, more comprehensive than its predecessor, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. And you can check out Rand Paul's remarks on advocate.com. I can't say this is disappointing, because Rand Paul has said things like this before, but that this would hold any sway with any audiences anywhere would be nuts. I keep thinking about when I was right out of grad school, my first year out of grad school, I worked at a university where I instituted a safe zone training. And it was a day-long training, and at the end of the day, the whole point of it, we wanted visual identifiers on campus. This was in 2001, 2002. We wanted visual identifiers on campus that there were places to go where you could talk about your LGBT identity, or maybe one of your parents came out, or maybe a sibling came out, or maybe your roommate came out. And you would go to these folks. Again, this was 2001, 2002, so LGBT issues were not in the public consciousness in the same way that they are now. We weren't at 9 out of 10 Americans saying that they have an LGBT person in their lives. So we wanted these visual identifiers to be all over campus, some sort of rainbow flag. I think it was a rainbow triangle of some sort. And so it was a day-long training, and you would get this card. And at the end of the day, three folks from counseling who went through the whole training, I was giving out the cards, they said, oh, no, we don't want the cards. And I was a little bit baffled by that. And I said, why? The whole point was to get the cards. Why don't you want the cards? And their response, again, one more time, it was 2001, 2002. I would hope these views have evolved. But their opinion was, we don't want to put up a visual identifier that would alienate homophobic students. Now, there is absolutely no way. I was completely baffled by that. But there is absolutely no way that you can live sexual orientation neutral in your workplace. It is near impossible. Things come up. I'm not saying that you have to come out as gay or you have to come out as straight at the workplace, but there are some indications like, hey, if you're wearing a wedding ring or a picture on your desk or any number of other value statements that you make without even realizing it, because talking about our home lives is so common, just referencing them. I'm not saying everyone stands around the water cooler and talks about who their partner is, but there are references that are so commonplace. Hey, my wife and I were watching The Voice last night, you know, whatever it might be. So the idea, as Rand Paul is putting forth, that gay people can somehow leave their sexual orientation at home and not bring it into work with them is actually just a total fallacy. It's just completely impossible. Yes, as the Human Rights Campaign put out there in their statement, it's ridiculous to suggest that gay people should have to do this, but also I would argue it's almost impossible to do this, period. Because we do not live in a sexual orientation, affectional, preference, neutral place in this world. It comes up in daily conversation no matter what type of job you are in. So really disappointing there, even more disappointing that the Republicans have said, you know, nothing in response to this. Hillary Clinton had some great statements in response. You should go check that out. Over in Michigan, the campaign signs of a gay mayoral candidate in Michigan have been the target of vandalism. Ken Siver, a former city councilman who is running for mayor of Southfield, which is a Detroit suburb, not that far from where I sit right now, he revealed this week that one of his signs was defaced with anti-gay slurs earlier in the week. Two others were destroyed. He said this quote, "I'm upset and disturbed by the vandalism. It's not a Southfield value. There hasn't really been any racial strife here. We've had a lot of harmony in this community." In response, he and his campaign erected another sign next to the one that was torn. It reads, "Hate is not a Southfield community value." The destruction of the signs has not been the only controversy in the election. Flyers reading, "Let's get the blacks out of Southfield," which included a photo of Siver, who was white, were placed in the mailboxes of community members. And he said this quote, "I think they are trying to find ways to discredit me. Police are investigating the incident." Not great news there. Over in lawsuit news, a gay man who formerly worked for the Federal Aviation Administration is suing the government agency for discrimination, and he hopes to make a larger point. Daniel Baldwin, who worked at the Federal Aviation Administration's control tower at Miami International Airport, filed suit last week in U.S. District Court in Florida, alleging he was passed over for promotions and subjected to a hostile environment because he's gay. And he also happens to be the man whose case led to the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's ruling this summer that we covered, that existing civil rights laws ban on gender discrimination also bans discrimination based on sexual orientation. That was a huge case during the summer. Baldwin's name was redacted from documents released by the EEOC at the time of the ruling, but he revealed his identity in an interview with the Washington Blade shortly thereafter. With his lawsuit, Baldwin hopes to expand the scope of the EEOC ruling, which is binding only on federal agencies and may be interpreted in different ways by various courts regarding other employers. His lawyer, Lowell Kuvin, said this, quote, "While the decision by the EEOC in Baldwin versus Fox was a giant step forward for extinguishing sexual orientation discrimination by allowing federal employees to pursue sexual orientation claims under the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Title VII, it was just a small step forward for non-government employees. The next logical step for Mr. Baldwin, who would like to see the protection of Title VII extended to non-government employees alleging sexual orientation discrimination, was to bring the issue to the federal courts." Really important lawsuit here. We will certainly follow that. We covered last week what's going on in Houston, Texas with their equal rights ordinance, and apparently it's getting even nuttier there. The anti-LGBT forces aiming to overturn Houston's equal rights ordinance just gained a prominent supporter in the form of Texas Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. Opponents' fear-mongering rhetoric is reaching a fever pitch, as reports The Advocate. As this November 3rd election nears, Houston residents will vote on whether to keep in place the Houston Equal Rights Ordinance, HERO, which is the broad-spectrum ordinance that protects Houstonians against discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity in housing, employment, and public accommodations. After the Texas Supreme Court ruled in July that Houston officials must either repeal HERO or put it to a public vote, the ordinance found a home on November's ballot as Proposition 1, and Lieutenant Governor Patrick said this, quote, Proposition 1 is not about equality, that's already the law. It's about letting men in women's locker rooms and bathrooms, end quote. That is not what this is about. And this is a lieutenant governor saying that this proposition is about letting men in women's locker rooms and bathrooms. You kind of can somewhat, possibly, in some remote sense, accept this rhetoric, this fear-mongering rhetoric from little known folks who don't know better. You would hope that Lieutenant Governor Patrick would know better. Meanwhile, in this anti-LGBT campaign for Houston, that's what they're calling it, campaign for Houston, there are so many transphobic claims, which are frequently recycled by opponents of equal access for LGBT people. They are patently false. Not only does Houston currently lack non-discrimination protections for LGBT people, meaning equality is not already the law in Houston, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, but HERO's passage would in no way allow legal cover for men to enter women's restrooms. And as noted, Houston has had a law on the books that expressly criminalizes anyone who deliberately enters a sex-segregated bathroom with the intent of harassing someone of the opposite sex. Oh gosh. As Media Matters recently noted in a full debunking of those scare tactics, several major Texas cities have already implemented LGBT-inclusive non-discrimination ordinances, and none, and I repeat, none of the fatalistic predictions of the anti-hero crowd have come to pass. What the proposed ordinance would do, because let's put out the actual information, it would allow transgender men and women to use the facilities that correspond with their gender identity. It would also create an avenue for legal resource for LGBT people who feel they have been discriminated against in housing or in employment. And finally, HERO would bring Houston policies into line with federal guidelines that prohibit discrimination on the basis of 15 distinct characteristics. This is a quote from the ordinance. It prohibits discrimination in city employment and city services, city contracts, public accommodations, private employment, and housing based on an individual's sex, race, color, ethnicity, national origin, age, familial status, marital status, military status, religion, disability, sexual orientation, genetic information, that's a new one to me, gender identity, or pregnancy. Nowhere in the proposed ordinance are bathrooms or locker rooms mentioned directly. The ordinance's provision regarding equal access to public accommodations is generally interpreted to include gender-segregated spaces like bathrooms and locker rooms. So again, that would be Lieutenant Governor Patrick there in Texas saying Proposition 1 is not about equality. Okay, let's pause there. It is. Then he said that's already the law. Nope. There in Houston, equality is not already the law. And finally, he says it's about letting men in women's locker rooms and bathrooms. No, sir, Lieutenant Governor Patrick, that is not what this is about. So a lot of misinformation needing to be corrected there in Texas. Turning our attention north, our neighbors to the north, Canada. If you did not hear, I mean, it was everywhere. Canada has a new prime minister, and he's got a famous name and progressive views, including on LGBT rights. Justin Trudeau of the Liberal Party. He won this week's highly anticipated election, besting incumbent Stephen Harper, a member of the Conservative Party, and Tom Mulcair of the leftist New Democratic Party. Trudeau's victory makes him the second youngest prime minister in Canada's history and the first to succeed a parent in the nation's top spot. He is the son of the late Pierre Trudeau, who was prime minister from 1968 to 1984, with a brief interruption in there. Trudeau is noted for his progressive political views, being a self-proclaimed feminist and a passionate advocate for LGBT rights. He said during an interview this year, quote, we're celebrating 10 years of taking the decision the Supreme Court in the U.S. just took. It's a great day for freedom. It's wonderful to see political leaders celebrating this. Trudeau's predecessor Harper made headlines in 2012 when anxiety arose that his administration was trying to undo the legality of same-sex marriage in Canada. Harper told the public there was nothing to worry about. But there, an election there in Canada, Justin Trudeau of the Liberal Party, a staunch LGBT advocate. So very exciting news there in our neighbors to the north, right there in Canada. The State Department here in the U.S., following the Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage nationwide, the U.S. State Department announced this week that it will start to phase out the same-sex domestic partner program. And that actually has LGBT employees working overseas and their allies concerned. Officials will begin dismantling the program in December, and it will end completely in 2018. Undersecretary of State for Management Patrick Kennedy told the Washington Blade this, quote, "When Obergefell versus Hodges legalized same-sex marriage throughout the United States, federal spousal benefits administrated by the department became available equally to married opposite-sex and same-sex couples. Because married same-sex couples are now able to receive a wide array of benefits available to any married couples in the federal government, the original justification for the SSDP program no longer exists." Foreign service personnel who are stationed in a country that would not allow them to get married will be given 10 days of administrative leave to travel to a country or jurisdiction that will. The policy is available to both same-sex and opposite-sex couples. The GLIFAA, which is the department's group for LGBT employees, they have actually protested this decision, pointing out that it is not safe for some personnel to marry a foreign-born spouse. In countries that don't have protections for LGBT people or where homosexuality is illegal, the ramifications for spouses or their families could be disastrous. The GLIFAA president, Regina June, said this in a statement, quote, GLIFAA supports equal treatment and fair protections for all employees and having protections available for families that have different needs. Rather than focusing on rollback, the department should work to ensure all Americans can represent their country overseas, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. LGBT plus employees continue to face significant hurdles in finding a posting abroad where they can safely and effectively serve with their families. So at first glance, you would think that this would be a great thing. And indeed, you know, this is progression that the same-sex domestic partner program is being phased out, but maybe not all the ramifications have been thought through here. So keeping our eye on that. In Chicago, at an event in Chicago this past weekend, Human Rights Campaign President Chad Griffin had some choice words for a Windy City congressman who happens to be the only Democrat co-sponsoring the Anti-LGBT First Amendment Defense Act. U.S. Representative Dan Lipinski's support of the bill is an attack on our families and his own constituents. That's a quote, an attack on our families and his own constituents. That's what Chad Griffin told the crowd at HRC's Chicago Gala Saturday night. The legislation would prevent federal agencies from penalizing individuals, businesses, or organizations for taking actions based on religious or moral opposition to marriage equality, essentially providing a license to discriminate against same-sex couples. If the bill becomes law, it will cause a complete breakdown of protections against discrimination. Its passage would probably happen only if Republicans control both houses of Congress and the presidency. A nearly identical bill introduced in 2013 went nowhere. The new legislation has been endorsed by the Republican National Committee and some GOP presidential hopefuls. At the gala, Chad Griffin also noted that HRC's federal legislative priority in the near future will be passing the Equality Act. Yay! A comprehensive bill that we just discussed that would prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity in employment, housing, and other venues. It will likely be, this is what Chad Griffin said, quote, the biggest legislative battle in the history of our movement. I like acknowledgement that it's about more than marriage equality. The Equality Act would be huge. It would be huge. Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel opened the event by noting the progress in LGBT rights since 1997, when Bill Clinton became the first sitting president to address an HRC gathering. Other speakers at this event included marriage equality plaintiff Jim Obergefell and gay pro football player Michael Sam. Several local officials, but not Lipinski, were among the 650 guests. So I like seeing that this is where the focus is going to be. It's going to be on the Equality Act. That really will make a huge difference as we have to keep reminding folks, Yes, I could get married tomorrow, and I will let you guys know if I indeed get married tomorrow. That would be a huge development that I would not be anticipating. But if I were to get married tomorrow, and I were to go in and put a picture of me and my partner, me and my husband, not just my partner, but my husband, on my desk at work here in the state of Ohio, I could be fired because there are no protections here in Ohio that would prevent me being discriminated against for my sexual orientation, and certainly not nationally either. So a lot more work to be done. I've gotten a ton of emails about the Huffington Post piece I wrote that just won't go away, which is fun for me because I stand by what I wrote and I love talking about it. But the piece about Danny Pintaro, there was a piece that was put out in Attitude magazine this week, an op-ed by Daniel Franzese. And if you don't know Daniel Franzese was the guy who was in Mean Girls. He played the gay guy in Mean Girls, and now he was on the second season of Looking, which I have not yet seen. But he put out an op-ed in Attitude magazine called Why Danny Pintaro Should Be Commended. And in this piece, he actually links to my piece, and he says, first people jump on the View host for shaming Danny, then some LGBT thought leaders direct their feelings of anger and disappointment at Danny himself. My beef is that these leaders, and he was talking about me because he referred to my article, write about ending stigma, but instead of writing a private note to Danny offering to advise him, they instead criticize him publicly. Why would anyone with HIV come out publicly if that is the consequence? So I have an issue with this, kind of. I honestly didn't really care much about his op, but then I was reading a thread there on Danny Franzese's Facebook page where he said that my piece was shaming and bullying, and I have an issue with that. I think saying that being critical of each other is shaming and bullying is taking this way too far. Way, way too far. That is not shaming and bullying. We need to be able to be critical with each other. So I posted something there, and he responded, and he said this quote. This sounds like very back and forth, which is not me. It's just important that we acknowledge it's actually okay to be critical of each other. So he said this quote, he's not a mouthpiece as much as he is a person sharing his own story. Yes, even he will admit, and he's talking about Danny Pintaro, even he will admit perhaps he made a few mistakes in doing so and was maybe a tad too green on HIV PC lingo, but you are missing the fact that HIV and AIDS hasn't been a water cooler topic in years. Danny has repeatedly stated that he is open and willing to align himself with organizations that welcome him in and has been studying and learning ways to be a more effective speaker. My issue with this is that why did this all not happen before? So Danny Pintaro came forward voluntarily. This was not like 12 years ago when he was outed by the Inquirer. He came out here as HIV positive. He was on Oprah. He was on The View. He was on the Huffington Post Live. He's been in all these different magazines. He's been in Us Weekly. A month ago, he was a server at P.F. Chang's. There's something to be gained here by Danny Pintaro. Did it take extreme bravery for Danny Pintaro to come out as HIV positive? Without question. But here's my thing. Why are we not seeing it as problematic that Danny Pintaro came out before he was on point with the HIV PC lingo? Why are we not seeing it as problematic that Danny Pintaro came out before he had supportive connections with organizations? Why are we not seeing it as problematic that Danny Pintaro came out before he studied and learned ways to be a more effective speaker? He assumed this role voluntarily. He assumed this role voluntarily, and it's actually okay for us, as he went before the public spotlight, to also use the public spotlight to say, hey, slow down there, guy. You actually are doing your part to shore up pieces of stigma. And so it's important that you actually know what you're saying here. So I don't see that as shaming and bullying, far from it. I actually think we need to be critical of each other. And these op-eds that are being put out there saying, hey, if a gay person says something, other gay people support them. No, no. We can still acknowledge the bravery in coming out as HIV positive in this day and age, but we need to be able to be critical of each other in a respectful way. Otherwise, we will not get better. Period. And I'm done talking about Danny Pintaro. So that was my rant. It's my radio show. I just kind of put that out there. So there you go. Hey, our huge, huge thanks to Sarah Prager, who is doing such amazing things with that Quist app. I urge you to go to your app store and download the Quist app. It is free. It is free. This was not a promotional appearance for Sarah Prager here on This Show Is So Gay. Quist is free. And it will give you a sense of everything that has come before us. Having a sense of history is so important. It gives you a sense where our LGBT community has come from. You will establish connections across the barriers of time with our brothers and sisters who came before us. It's an amazing app. I encourage you to go get it and go look up what happened on my birthday. Some cool things happened on February 20th. That is it for this week's episode. I encourage you all to get out there and go do whatever it is that you do to make a difference for your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters. You have to do your part. Whatever it is that you do best, I don't know what it is, whether it's hosting a radio show or writing an op-ed or planning a movie night or researching what PFLAG is doing in your area, whatever it is that you do to raise up the voices of your LGBT and ally brothers and sisters, go do it. And while you're out there making a difference, please remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?
Sit two stories above the streets. It's awful quiet here since love fell asleep. There's light down below me though. The kids are walking home from school. Long ago when we were taught, for whatever kind of puzzle you got, you just stick the right formula in. A solution for every fool. Well, I remember the time when I came so close to you, simply skipping my class and running from school. What makes me think I could start clean slate? The hardest to learn was from G's complicated. Oh yeah. So I just sit up in the house and resist, and stop the sin until I see to insist. A kind of conscientious obsession. Walking home from school.